Like the show? Want to listen to episodes early? Consider becoming a patron. Starting at the $3 a month level, patrons get access to a custom patron-only feed where we put out episodes of upstairs studio podcasts like the Childcare Bar and Grill, Miss Becky's Classroom, That Early Childhood Nerd, the Renegade Rules podcast, and others early. That feed is just for patrons. You could be one of them. Go to patreon.com/playvolutionhq or click the link in the show description to learn more. Jeff Johnson here with Lisa Murphy. How you doing, Lisa Murphy?
I am good. I have a fresh, it's a mug. It's a mug as big as my head. It's a pot of Nespresso. So I'm good.
You were up late playing Scrabble last night, I hear.
I was. And it was a good game. Well, yeah, because if they don't play Scrabble with me, I don't feed them. So that's the rule.
Yeah. I'm not much into Scrabble because I'm a horrible speller. And then I want to play words that are like naughty words.
We allow that. We have a lot of like loose house.
A lot of house rules that are flexible. Yeah.
I'll be honest. I like to play Scrabble because it reminds me of my grandma. Because whenever we would go to grandma's house, we would play Scrabble.
That's a good reason to play.
And her picture was right up there. In fact, tonight when we play, I'm going to put grandma on the table and then I'm going to take a picture and send it to my grandma. And then she would probably comment and tell us that we spelled something wrong on the Scrabble board. but when the nieces and the nephews, when they first started, like when I brought them out there that year, 2014, my God. And like that was Carson's goal, was to beat grandma at Scrabble. And grandma did not respond well to being beaten at Scrabble. And that was kind of funny. I thought for a hot minute we were going to watch grandma flip the Scrabble board, you know, like through the air, like, you little shit.
Oh, that would have been a memory he carried with him the rest of his life.
Well, beating grandma at Scrabble probably is a memory he's going to keep with him for the rest of his life. Yeah, so that... It's the emotional connection of it. I mean, I'm not like a word person. I mean, I like to play Scrabble because it reminds me of my grandma. Uh-huh. And I like to do the New York Times crossword because it reminds me of, and my dear friend Jackie, who recently died. I mean, I started doing it because she brought it to the coffee at the market and she would sit there and we would all kind of collectively do the Sunday New York Times crossword, and she has since passed just this last week. It was a hard day. But that's what I do on Sundays now, and it's for them, right? It's not because I like it. It's the memory that gets evoked when I engage in that.
Yeah, you got to dig those kind of experiences. I'm having a little bit of a different experience, Lisa Murphy. As you can tell by the video, the big sliding door to the studio is kind of closed back there, you see?
Yeah, what's going on?
Well, I've had to keep the hounds out of the studio because they make some noise. And on the other side of that door, Slinky Dog is chewing on a huge bone. I went through my collection of loose part bones the other day because you can only have so many bones.
I hear you. And before, somebody calls the police.
Yeah. had decided it was time to kind of slim down the collection. And so he's chewing on a moose shoulder bone.
Please, you have to send me one for Kane.
They are all pretty much demolished because they're kind of older and were already, they weren't like the good bones. They were the partless. So it's just bone shreds all over the yard right now.
God. But ooh, I hope you don't happy puppy dogs.
So I've had to kind of control the environment here in the studio so we could get at least halfway decent pod sound. The topic for today?
Well, I don't know. I thought maybe we were going to go down another pebble path there with memories and games and people and why we engage in things. And it's sometimes not necessarily because we like it, but we like how we feel when we're doing it. I don't know.
Well, we can go there too if you want to.
Well, you got something to, I mean, I just served it to you. Do you got something to return back?
I don't know.
Okay, so here we go. Controlling the environment. This is from a listener. I had put a call out on the interwebs, as I sometimes do, that we were going in a studio. So here was her nugget. I'm going to read it. Controlling the environment. Adults don't realize just how much they adjust their environment for their own needs or comfort. Those same potential egocentric people turn around and lose it with their children for attempts to do the same because the adults fail to search for understanding the what and the why of a child's behavior. So in essence, I think getting mad when a kid does what we would be doing if we were in the same situation, if that makes any sense. Also, people of any age are considered, that's a whole different question. Never mind. So when adults fail to search for understanding in a child's behavior, in the environment, well, when we don't see, maybe go on.
I mean, it happens. It happens probably quite a bit. And I think it's probably in a lot of, look, it's the environment is a constant balancing act, right? Because there's no way you can create an environment that only takes the children's needs into consideration, because you're part of that environment. The adults are part of that environment. So some of what goes into or stays out of that environment has to take the adults into consideration as well, right?
It does. And actually, Jeff, I was distracted while you were talking because I realized what you kind of served right before we started talking about the topic is this topic.
Oh, really?
Sorry, only second cup of coffee. The closing of the door, right? You close the door so that it wasn't going to be noisy so we could make a podcast. So yeah. As an adult, you adjusted the environment to make it more favorable for your needs.
Yeah.
And
I took his needs into consideration too. I didn't take the moose shoulder blade away from him. I just closed the door so he's doing his thing a little bit further away from me in this live microphone.
Right.
I think
what she's pointing out is to keep on with your example. I'm sorry, I didn't see it. To keep up with your example, it would be the adult who takes the moose shoulder bone away and still pushes maybe the kid into the kitchen.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. How can I make the environment as favorable for everybody who's in the space? But I would actually,
if you have children chewing on shoulder bones, I mean,
somebody's going to call the cops.
Probably. So, I mean, it's always that dance of trying to achieve balance, right? And I think it goes back a couple episodes ago. We talked about pebbles and how they are distractions. And so if we are walking around with a lot of pebbles in our shoe, there are a lot of adjustments we make to our environments that favor our needs over the children's needs much of the time. If you're having a rough day, argument with the spouse on the way in, listen to the news on the radio on the way in and don't like what you heard, you're hungover, I don't know what's going on with you, and you need to make adjustments to your classroom to keep yourself sane, I get that. And if that's an everyday thing and it gets to the point where the children's needs are not being sufficiently met, it's time for you to back up and take a look at those things. And I don't want to turn this into another pebble discussion, but I think that's a big part of it.
Yeah. I think if anybody's needs, and this is going to sound weird, but I'm going to just toss it out there. If anybody's needs are going to go unmet, it needs to be the adult.
Well,
because
sure.
Adults are ideally in a position of more maturity to be able to figure that out.
Yeah. Yeah. We've had enough practice at having our needs go unmet, that we are better prepared, hopefully, and able, hopefully, to tolerate it for bits and pieces of time without melting down.
And by needs being met, I'm not talking about the kinds of, because I realized I sounded a little inconsistent there. I'm not talking about the like big, you know, put your own mask on first to breathe the oxygen before helping the other kid. I'm not talking that kind of level of need. I'm talking about like, you know, this kid needs to build block towers today and knock them over because he's two you need to put your headache on pause and not stop that, you know, or go take some Advil or realize that, you know, for you to shut this down for that reason is not, that's a little different than, you know, the fire is the building's burning down and you need to, you know, put your own mask on first.
Yeah. I've been spending a lot of time with block play stuff lately. And Harriet Johnson's first stage of block play is the exploring of the blocks, though, where this is usually the little kids, the youngest kids are hauling them and toting them and dumping them and mouthing them and just to getting to know them as a thing before they actually start doing cool block structures with them. And for a lot of early learning people, that's something that they try to shut down in the environment because it
doesn't look like they're doing anything.
Yeah. It means they're not building with them right. And they are exactly building with them right because that's developmentally where they are with them. But because it makes a bigger mess for the adults to clean up and it looks more chaotic when the other adults, the parents come into the classrooms, it's something that gets shut down. But it is 100% a need of children who are going through that stage. And yet we often create environments where that bit of it isn't allowed.
It also, Jeff, perfect to what you just said, is the process over the product.
Yeah, right? Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
100%. I mean, that what a great interview scenario. Like if you could actually stage that, you know, having an adult have to interact with kids who are smack in the middle of the process part of blocks, not the product part of blocks, and see kind of gauging their response or gauging their true comfort level with that situation, not just what they tell you during the interview.
Yeah. Yeah. I think a lot of this environmental stuff goes back to what early learning guru Dan Hodgins says about not making moral issues out of developmental issues, which we come to when it comes to things like dumping the blocks or throwing things or whatever.
Cleaning
it
up.
Is. Yeah. Cleanup time, rough and tumble
Hitting.
Play, death play, all those kind of things. Those are just developmental things kids are going through, and the environment should be equipped to handle them.
Right. And I wouldn't even, well, handle, yes. I was going to say to hold those behaviors, right? Like just an adult doesn't need to handle it. Adults need to.
Well, I didn't say adults handle. I said environment can handle it.
Environment handle it. True. But I think adults are going to put themselves in a position of thinking that somehow they need to guide it or direct it or do something with it or manage it or redirect it. The environments need to be set up to contain those behaviors. Adults need to become better at judging and interpreting which things actually need their direct attention. And I think that takes a long time.
Yeah. We're halfway through this episode. What was the question again? What are we talking about?
Let me read again.
I think we might have. I just want to make sure we didn't go completely off track for what they were specifically asking.
No, she was. I think what she was trying to say, and I should have maybe paraphrased it, that adults don't realize just how much they adjust an environment for their own comfort, but then they lose it when a child does exactly the same thing.
Yeah, sure. If Kimmy needs to throw shit because she's at the developmental stage where she is trying to figure out how her body works and doing a little bit of STEM learning with that block or baby doll or whatever it is flying across the room. And you haven't created an environment where there's some place and some things that can be thrown, then Kimmy's going to figure out how to do it.
How to throw things while either you're not watching or she's going to throw them anyway, even though it's making you mad, instead of just realizing that by controlling the environment, you can make a place for that verb to happen without you having a moral meltdown monologue.
Yeah. Yeah. I think there's this tendency to try to prune out those activities from the environment that we, for whatever reason, don't feel comfortable with.
100%.
And the result of that isn't those things not happening. It's those things happening in the shadows, in the teacher can't see me corners of the environment at first. And then if you come down on those things with an iron fist, the need doesn't go away. And so they're going to be more blatant about it, and they're going to come out further out into the open. And
or deeper into the shadows.
Or deeper
into the shadows. And that's then when kids get hurt, right? That's when shit happens.
Sure.
Right?
And so,
I really struggle with that. And I think it's because I'm getting older. I have a little more understanding of when people used to say, you know, you really learn to pick your battles, or as you get older, you know, it's like what really honestly is the big ass deal? And what really is the issue? And they're verbs. They're those big body verbs, the throw, the run, the climb, the scream, the spin, roll, hit. They're those big verbs. But we know, maybe we don't trust that we can make the space for that to happen. Maybe that's what it is. So we shut it down because we don't trust how we might end up responding to it. But like, to me, it's so much easier. You can't see me, but I'm looking out to the yard. Like, there's a whole big old yard out there. If you need to roll and run and scream and yell, go knock your bad self out, and I'll be here when you need me. You know, if you need me, I'm going to be over here. Instead of trying, how much energy you're using and wasting trying to get those verbs to just not happen when you know those verbs are what kids bring to the table.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, part of the solution, I guess, is a better understanding of child development amongst the people that are working with children. Because if you understand that humans need to roll and spin and jump and climb and throw, then truly understand it. Not that you took a class and they said this thing, but truly understand that these...
Jeff Johnson told me that kids need to run and throw stuff, so therefore...
Yeah, but that's a piece of it, because I think there are plenty of people in the field who just, they don't grasp the importance of those kind of things. And so a deeper understanding there, but also more willingness to just take a couple steps back and bite your tongue.
Terrific teachers have teeth marks on their tongue.
I was trying to set you up. Who said that?
Alfie.
Yeah, there we go. Alfie Cohen, people. And Lisa's crush.
I know I have to fight people for him. I'm first in line. That's the only time you see me being a royal bitch. I am first in line. It's so stupid.
I like to watch. Maybe it doesn't have to be fight. Maybe arm wrestling.
I would lose arm wrestling. It could be foot wrestling. Then I could gross them out with my wart.
Yeah, you just touch them with your wart. And they give up. There's controlling the environment to meet your needs. That's Lisa right. Needs to win, so it has to be foot wrestling.
Right? Dun, dun, dun. But it's either going to take us in a different direction or we're going to make the point or we're going to say it's going to be its own episode. But we make our jobs so much harder than they need to be, right?
Sure.
It's a lot easier. And I think people are struggling, because we've had this conversation during the COVID with a couple people about just because it's easy or it feels easy, it doesn't mean you're not doing good work. You know,
yeah.
And so it's almost like I'm wanting to formulate various definitions of the word easy or of the feeling that we associate with the word easy. You know, it's not easy like I'm not involved, I'm not engaged, I'm like doing something else, I'm like, oh, it's so, you know, easy. It's that by saying go do those things outside, I can see you, go do them.
Mm-hmm.
Like why? Oh, but then yeah, but then what? Like what's the big deal? Go do it. It's going to make your life a lot easier. They're going to be enjoying their time together. You don't need to be involved in it. Why would you not do that? I don't understand that. Like, why are you making it harder on yourself?
Maybe we need to play with the language a little bit and replace easy with efficient. When we talk about things being easy or it doesn't have to be so hard, we're kind of setting things up to, because the easy way, I mean, it sounds like
it
any
sounds
Haskell
lazy.
Trying to find his, yeah.
Yeah, and, trying to find, to circumvent my duties and obligations to get to the quickest, you know, the easiest path. And,
yeah,
and that's
so much of American culture is built on Puritanism, where, I mean, it's like, we got to get in there and do the work. And
like if it's not hard and difficult, I didn't do a good job.
Yeah. And so, well, just related to the podcast, we've been doing this for a few years, right? And I'm producing a number of other shows, and it's gotten to the point over the years that I've become more efficient at it. Not that I'm looking for shortcuts, but that I've figured out ways to go from recording session to published show that are a more effective use of my time and energy. And I think we could use those same things in the classroom. We just find it's more efficient for children to learn in an environment where they don't have adults trying to control as many things. It's more efficient for children to learn in their early years through play than it is through formal academics where we're trying to dump things into their heads.
So therefore, it is more efficient for me to say yes, because yeah. Every no that I put out there is a roadblock, is a hazard, is a speed bump.
Yeah.
So why would I do that? So it's taking longer to get to the destination because I keep putting these hurdles in front of the child by saying no. Whereas if I just said yes, it's like, whoo, there you go.
Yeah, I mean, it's more.
More efficient. No, you're right. It's more efficient
to move at the child's pace based on their interest than it is to try to dump things into their head because somebody 1,000 miles away wrote a curriculum that said when they're 2.5, they need to learn about snow in February.
In Florida.
Yeah, exactly. So maybe,
or Phoenix.
Yeah. And so maybe there's something to play around there is to talk about valuing play and valuing child-led activities, not because they're better or they're easier, but because they're more efficient. And I mean, the reason evolutionarily that those things work is because they're more efficient, period.
That's a good point.
This is what we as a biological entity have figured out is the best way to prepare a child to survive and thrive in their culture is through play and self-led exploration of the environment.
I wonder if anybody has studied that. I mean, seriously, nerd alert, the efficiency of play. I'm wondering if that's a topic of research somewhere or if somebody's written a book about that.
Trademark. Trademark if they hadn't.
Yeah, right? The efficiency of
play. I mean, I'm not going to go do any research or anything, but...
Yeah, but we've
like
called it, so it's ours.
If somebody listens to this episode and does some research and writes...
I got dibs on the efficiency of play.
Yeah, there we go. Any more of this one?
I'm good.
This here has been the Child Care Bar and Grill podcast. We'll be back soon with another episode. Thanks for tuning in. Episode 611, 611. Back soon. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
This has been an Explorations Early Learning Upstairs Studio production.